So we have a lot of scripture to cover this morning as we dive back into the book of Exodus. In fact, we're going to cover almost two entire chapters. So rather than have you guys read all of this with me and feel like you yourself might be in the desert for 40 years, we are just going to kind of soak it in. So I'm just going to read this to you. If you guys are okay with that, I'm going to make some stops here and there just along the way and kind of highlight some key points. Are we good? All right. So I'm going to be starting off in the 15th chapter, somewhere around verse 23. We are in this Braving the Wilderness teaching series. This is the last day of it, but we are not done learning about the journey, about the Israelites. We got more to learn from them. So the next teaching series will be more on that to come. So stay tuned. Here we go, verse 22. Then Moses led Israel from the Red Sea, and they went into the desert of Shur. For 3 days they traveled in the desert without finding water. And when they came to Marah, they could not drink its water because it was bitter. This is why the place is called Marah, because Marah means bitter. So the people grumbled against Moses, saying, "What are we to drink?" So then Moses cried out to the Lord, and the Lord showed him a piece of wood. He threw it into the water, and the water became fit to drink. All right, jumping ahead, chapter 16, verse 1. They set out from Elim, and all the congregation of the people of Israel came to the wilderness of Sin. Now, let's pause here for a moment, because wilderness of Sin may not mean what you think it means in the context of what this was written in this time and place. The word sin, as it was translated, was originally probably trying to point us towards what the pagans called the god of sin, or a lunar god or the moon god, okay? So this wasn't the desert of sin where people congregated to go and commit sin. That's Las Vegas. All right. The wilderness of Sin, which is between Elim and Sinai, on the 15th day of the second month after they had departed from the land of Egypt. So now we see here the author is giving us a timeline. So it's about 2.5 months after they all left Egypt. Now the whole congregation of the people of Israel grumbled against Moses and Aaron in the wilderness. And the people of Israel said to them, "Would that we had died by the hand of the Lord in the land of Egypt, when we sat by the meat pots and ate bread to the full. For you have brought us out into this wilderness to kill this whole assembly with hunger." Then the Lord said to Moses, "Behold, I am about to rain bread from heaven for you, and the people shall go out and gather a day's portion every day, that I may test them whether they will walk in my law or not. And on the sixth day, when they prepare what they are bringing in, it will be twice as much as they gather daily." So Moses and Aaron said to all the people of Israel, "At evening you shall know that it was the Lord who brought you out of the land of Egypt. And in the morning you shall see the glory of the Lord, because he has heard your grumbling against the Lord. For what are we that you grumble against us?" And Moses says, "When the Lord gives you in the evening meat to eat, and in the morning bread to the full, because the Lord has heard your grumbling, that you grumble against him, what are we? Your grumbling is not against us, but against the Lord." Then Moses said to Aaron, "Say to the whole congregation of the people of Israel, come near before the Lord, for he has heard your And as soon as Aaron spoke to the whole congregation of the people of Israel, they looked toward the wilderness, and behold, the glory of the Lord appeared in the cloud. And the Lord said to Moses, "I have heard the grumbling of the people of Israel. Say to them, at twilight you shall eat meat, and in the morning you shall be filled with bread, and then you shall know that I am the Lord your God." Now, in the evening, quail came up and covered the camp, and in the morning, dew lay around the camp. And when the dew had gone up, there was on the face of the wilderness a fine flake-like thing, fine as frost on the ground. And when the people of Israel saw it, they said to one another, "What is it?" For they did not know what it was. And Moses said to them, "Well, it is the bread that the Lord has given you to eat. Now, this is what the Lord has commanded. Gather of it, each one of you, as much as you can eat. And you shall each take an omer according to the number of the persons that each of you have in your tent." And the people of Israel did so, and they gathered some more, some less. But when they measured it with an omer, whoever gathered much had nothing left over, and whoever gathered little had no lack. Each of them gathered as much as he could eat. And Moses said to them, let no one leave any of it over till morning. But they did not listen to Moses, of course. Some left part of it till morning. And you know what? It bred maggots and stank. I just like saying maggots in church. And it stank. And Moses was angry with them. Morning by morning they gathered it, each as much as he could eat. But when the sun grew hot, it melted. Well, on the sixth day, they gathered twice as much bread, 2 omers each. And when all the leaders of the congregation came and told Moses, he said to them, this is what the Lord has commanded. Tomorrow is a day of solemn rest, a holy Sabbath to the Lord. Bake what you will bake and boil what you will boil. And all that is left over, lay aside to be kept till the morning. So they laid it aside till the morning, and as Moses commanded them, and it did not stink, and there were no maggots in it. Moses said, eat it today, for today is a Sabbath to the Lord. Today you will not find it in the field. 6 days you shall gather it, but on the seventh day, which is a Sabbath, there will be none. Now, this is a little bit of foreshadowing because God really hasn't introduced the commandments to the Israelites yet. Okay, this hasn't happened yet. Moses hasn't gone up to the mountaintop yet. Okay, so this is their first introduction to this thing called the Sabbath. All right. Now, verse 27, on the seventh day, some of the people went out together, but they found none because they weren't supposed to. And the Lord said to Moses, how long will you refuse to keep my commandments and my laws? See? The Lord has given you the Sabbath. Therefore, on the sixth day, he gives you bread for 2 days. Remain each of you in his place, and let no one go out of his place on the seventh day. So the people rested on the seventh day. Now, the house of Israel called its name manna. The bread called it manna. And they say it was like coriander seed, white, and the taste of it was like wafers made with honey. That sound yummy. Now, if you read in the book of Numbers, they offer another description of manna. They describe it as kind of a cross between the coriander seed. By the way, does anybody know what coriander seed grows? Who said that? Look at you. I'm just curious. Who likes cilantro? Who does not like cilantro? Some people just hate cilantro. It's an interesting dynamic between the cilantro lovers and haters. But anyway, that has nothing to do with anything. But they take the coriander seed, and they say that it kind of looks like a cross between the coriander seed and the delium stones. And the delium stones were like crystals they used to make perfume. All right, it was kind of like in the myrrh family. So that was kind of how the author of the book of Numbers described it. So when it formed on the ground, it probably looked something like a real heavy frost or a light snow. Maybe something like this, okay? Now, of course, it said that they had some meat come in the evenings. Remember what was it? It's quail. Now, I don't know, have you ever had quail? Anybody ever eat quail? It's pretty yummy, right? I could live on quail and bread for 40 years, you know? Yeah, maybe not, but but it's pretty yummy. Well, I like a quail. Quail is a bird, and it's actually native to Kentucky, right? So, you know, it's from these parts as well. In fact, I read the other day that there was a bunch of quail. By the way, the plural for quail is quail. And there was a bunch of them in a park with some geese. They found them dead on a swing set. The police suspect foul play. Yeah. Moving on. Verse 32, Moses said, this is what the Lord has commanded. Let an omer of it be kept throughout your generations, so that they may see the bread with which I fed you in the wilderness when I brought you out of the land of Egypt. And Moses said to Aaron, take a jar and put an omer of manna in it and place it before the Lord to be kept throughout your generations. So as the Lord commanded Moses, so Aaron placed it before the testimony to be kept. Now this testimony they're talking about here is the testimony of the covenant. Or the Ark of the Covenant. Again, this is more foreshadowing. This hasn't been put into existence yet. It's the Ark of the Covenant that they used to carry the important artifacts in their culture, like the Ten Commandments, the stone tablets. Well, also they placed an omer of manna in a jar, as a gold jar, gold plated jar in this Ark of the Covenant. Now, the people of Israel ate the manna for 40 years until they came to a habitable land where they ate the manna till they came to the border of the land of Canaan. Now, here the author tells us what an omer is, because I know you're sitting there wondering, well, what's an omer? Well, he tells us right here, an omer is a tenth part of an ephah. So there you go. Now you know. That clears it right up. If you're really into biblical units of measurement, if you're wondering, an ephah is a modern-day equivalent, for those of us who do inch-pounds, to almost 5 gallons. So a tenth of that is about half a gallon. So about a half gallon, size of a half gallon of milk, volumetrically, right? Okay, we tracking? Chapter 17, verse 1. Here we go. All the congregation of the people of Israel moved on from the wilderness of Sin by stages, according to the commandment of the Lord. And they camped at Rephidim, but there was no water for the people to drink. Therefore, the people quarreled with Moses and said, "Give us water to drink." And Moses said to them, "Why do you quarrel with me? Why do you test the Lord?" But the people thirsted there for water, and the people grumbled against Moses and said, "Why did you bring us up out of Egypt to kill us and our children and our livestock with thirst?" So Moses cried to the Lord, "What shall I do with this people? They are almost ready to stone me." So the Lord said to Moses, "Pass on before the people, taking with you some of the elders of Israel, and take in your hand the staff with which you struck the Nile, the staff in which you struck the Nile, and go. Behold, I will stand before you there on the rock at Horeb, and you shall strike the rock, and water shall come out of it. And the people will drink." And Moses did so in the sight of the elders in Israel. And he called the name of the place Massah and Meribah because of the quarreling of the people of Israel and because they tested the Lord by saying, "Well, is the Lord among us or not?" Well, there's the question. This is the heart of our teaching this morning. And I know what you're thinking, especially if you've been here for the last few weeks and you've experienced this story, you've heard the story of the Israelites and all of these things that they've had to witness, right? I mean, they had to have witnessed God sending down the 10 plagues upon Egypt, okay? It was God that sent down the plagues, the grasshoppers and the frogs and all of that stuff and the Nile turning blood red. It was God who separated the Red Sea. It was God that delivered the people of Israel from their oppression from Pharaoh. It was God who put a cloud above them just to remind them of his presence. And in the daytime, it was a cloud. And in the evening, it was a pillar of fire constantly over the head. I mean, all you had to do was look up, people. And it was there. It was God that turned the bitter water into drinkable water. It was God that gave them the manna that they would eat in the morning. It was God that sent them to quail. All of these things these people of Israel had experienced over the course of the last several months. And yet they still have the nerve to ask this question: is the Lord among us or not? Now, before we're quick to pass judgment on the Israelites, don't we do this too? Yeah, you bet we do. Do we ever find ourselves questioning, complaining, looking for God, wondering if he's around, maybe even grumbling? From time to time, we might even question if God even exists. Am I wrong? Have we ever found ourselves asking this question, is the Lord with us or not? Especially when we find ourselves wandering through our desert places. Especially when we find ourselves in our wilderness. This is when our faith can really start to become tested and challenged. And we are wandering in the wilderness, it quickly becomes easy to feel like you're alone. But what I hope to unpackage here this morning, and what I think we all need to realize, is that we never, ever truly walk alone. Now, the wilderness was necessary for the Israelites. This was part of their training. They just couldn't leave Egypt and step right into the promised land because they had to go through the desert first. Okay, they had to learn what it meant to be fully dependent upon this God Yahweh that they were just getting acquainted with. They had to learn how to be a follower of God. They had to have their own mindset, their own attitudes, their own presuppositions needed to be reprogrammed. And it was God that saw them through the desert. It was God that gave them the food and the water and the shelter and provided for them for that whole period that they wandered through the desert. Now, our wilderness may seem a little less literal. Okay, the Israelites, they stepped into a physical place, a physical wilderness. But our wilderness may be more of a spiritual kind of experience, right? But while we are in this place, it's important for us to remember, and what I hope to highlight this morning is that we still serve a God that provides us even in the dark places, even in the places when we don't believe that He's there. We just might not be able to see it. And by not being able to see it, because at times God can be invisible. And in those moments, we may be prompted to ask this question. Is God with us or not? Now, I can tell you about personal experiences. I could spend a lot of time talking to you about times in my life when I know beyond a shadow of a doubt that God was working, that God's presence was there, and God provided for me in those wilderness times for me. I mean, I could tell you about the time that I joined the Air Force and I went into basic training as a 17-year-old kid. I turned 18 in basic training, first time away from home. And let me tell you, that's a scary, terrifying experience for a young man. And it was in that moment for the first time in my life that I felt like I was drawn closer to God than ever before. And as I spent a lot of time on my knees, Dale, I'm telling you, spent a lot of time on my knees. And it was through that prayer time, it was through that bonding with God, that feeling so alone. I was surrounded by all these strangers that I didn't know. And wall after wall, hurdle after hurdle began to fall as God sustained me and got me through that time. Or I could tell you about the time that I was in the lowest point in my life where I'd hit rock bottom and I had lost everything that was important to me. And I really honestly felt like that I was ready to cash in. I was ready just to give up on life altogether. And it was God who put these people in my life at just the right time, at just the right place to restore me and to prevent me from doing something stupid. Or I could tell you about the time that my wife and I wanted to have a child. My wife, who at the time wasn't able to have children. But yet this year we celebrate my son's 21st birthday. Or I could tell you about the time that I felt like God was calling me to attend seminary. And I prayed and I told him, I was like, God, there's no possible way I can do this. But if this is really your will, if you are really wanting me to do this, I need you to provide a financial means. And I graduated in May of 2019 with zero debt because God provided a way to get me through that seminary training. I could tell you about all of these ways that God provided for me, but I'm not going to. Because those are my stories. And though they're important to me, and though I love sharing them, they're not going to have the same meaning to you. So what I would rather do is spend the rest of the morning talking about how each of us can recognize how to find God in God's presence while we are wandering through the desert places in our life. Now, I believe that there are at least three key things that we can learn from the story of the Israelites. So we're going to talk about these this morning. First thing, if we are willing to follow God's guidance, He will provide for us. If we are willing to follow the will of God, to actively seek God's will, God will provide. We see that, how He provided for the Israelites. Now, we could spend a whole teaching series talking about how to discern God's will. Because I'm not going to lie to you. I know we know it's a challenge sometimes to understand what God's will for us is. But I guess the short answer, just to get us through it this morning, is just simply we need to start by seeking it. We have to be willing to seek God's will, because oftentimes we are just running rogue, making our own decisions without even consulting or seeking God's guidance in the important decisions that we make. When we are following God's will, then the pathway becomes clear. All the doors are opened for us, right? Getting from point A to point B suddenly becomes a lot easier. But when we wander off the path, suddenly that journey becomes more of a challenge. I like how Oswald Chambers says it, who was never one for mincing words. When we lose sight of God, we become hard and dogmatic. We hurl our own petition at God's throne and dictate to Him as to what we wish him to do. Anybody ever done that? Yeah. Guilty. But you know what? In my experience, even when I wander off the path, even when I allow myself to become distant, even when I make those bonehead decisions that aren't lined up with the will of God, somehow, some way, God still finds a way to show up and use my mistakes into something good. Because that's what God does. He turns something bad, something ugly, into something good. He never wastes a hurt. And we're reminded of this in Romans 8:28. And Paul says, "We know that in all things God works for the good of those who love him, who have been called according to his purpose." So yeah, it's certainly not the easy way to do it. It's probably not the best practice. Obviously, we want to follow God's will, and it will make our life so much easier. But if we wander, if we get lost, God's still going to show up, and God's still going to provide in those times that we're lost. Amen. God hears our cries. He hears the cries of his people, and we are reminded of this. We're reminded of this in the story of the Israelites. We're reminded of this all through Scripture. We're reminded of this in our own personal lives. Even Jesus taught us when he taught us how to pray, crying out to God, asking God for certain things. He says, ask God to give you your daily bread. Not a year surplus. Not a whole month's worth, Mike. Just a day's worth. That's all you need. Don't worry about tomorrow. Tomorrow will take care of itself. Remember that? We learned that a few weeks ago. Now, it's easy to get lost and confused between the difference in asking and grumbling, right? Grumbling is what the Israelites did in the desert. Now, I believe, this is just my opinion, I believe that the grumbling was inevitable. They were just learning, you know, how to be completely dependent upon God. They were just learning how to follow Yahweh. Imagine how you would be if your dependence on God was being tested daily and you were just learning about all of these things. And remember, these people were concerned about their well-being. They had family, women, and children. Everybody that they loved, they were traveling with. And they were in the middle of a desert. No water, no food. They were probably scared. So yeah, they grumbled. They complained. I mean, you know, God had the ability to provide for them at any point during this sojourn in the desert. But he waited, didn't he? He waited until the grumbling occurred. I mean, this is God. If God wanted to place a trail of M&Ms and Gatorade all the way to the promised land, he could have done that. But he chose not to. For whatever reason, he wanted to wait until they were hungry and they were thirsty so that they would cry out. Now, the problem here with the grumbling is twofold. Number one, grumbling is contagious. Negativity is contagious. If you surround yourself with negative people, you will become one. It probably started with one person grumbling, and it spread through the camp of the Israelites like a cancer. We've experienced this all the time, do we not? And number two, the people of Israel, they didn't cry out to God. Instead, what did they do? They complained to Moses, right? Even Moses told them in verse 8 of chapter 16, look, you're whining to the wrong guy. I'm just the messenger. But in spite of the grumbling, in spite of the negativity, God still heard them. Okay, we read this in verse 7, verse 8, verse 9, verse 12. God heard their grumbling, and what did he do? He provided. God provides. Now, the last thing we can learn is that God can provide through the ordinary. And what I think is interesting in chapter 17 is God chose to use just a common rock in the middle of the desert to provide them with something to drink. I mean, this is God, right? God could have built an oasis, a never-ending pond full of water that just followed them everywhere they went, or maybe a shower in the middle of the desert that just never stopped flowing, where they could get in and out and fill their cups, bathe, whatever. God could have done all those things, but instead he chose to use just a common, ordinary rock, probably thousands of them out there in the middle of the desert. Nothing fancy, just a rock. Do we look around at our ordinary lives full of rocks rocks that all look the same and wonder where God is? Why isn't God showing up? Why don't we feel God's presence? Where is he at? Is he with us or not? And we lose faith in God because God hasn't shown up in the ways that we expect God to. And all the while, we've done very little ourselves to seek God out, to let God know that we're thirsty or hungry or whatever our needs are, or to look for God at all, even in the ordinary. See, I believe we each struggle with a certain degree of desensitization where we have become so accustomed to these miracles that surround us, and that's what they are. We simply discount them as ordinary, and by doing so, we miss seeing God. We miss the opportunities to recognize God's presence in the little things. At least they may seem little. Even the Christian calendar reflects this. Okay, if we start with the Advent season, the season of anticipation that leads up to the story, the miraculous birth of Jesus, which leads us to the Epiphany, which leads us to the Lenten season, which leads us to the most beautiful story ever told, the story of the power of the resurrection on Easter Sunday. And then, boom, Pentecost Sunday comes, the church is born, and then the rest of the year is what? Ordinary time. Ordinary time. That doesn't mean God isn't present. That doesn't mean God isn't working in those times. That doesn't mean God isn't providing. Folks, there's nothing ordinary about being a follower of Jesus. That's year-round, 24/7, God providing. There's a really interesting passage in 1 Corinthians in which Paul spiritualizes the story of the Israelites' travels in the wilderness, and he makes a spiritual point to the church in Corinth, and he's making this point to us as well, and he says this: I do not want you to be ignorant of the fact, brothers and sisters, that our ancestors were all under the cloud and that they all passed through the sea. They were all baptized into Moses in the cloud and in the sea, and they all ate the same spiritual food, and they drank the same spiritual drink, for they drank from the spiritual rock that accompanied them. Now listen to this. And that rock was Christ. Now let's tackle this one piece where he says the rock accompanied them. What they're talking about here is Jewish tradition. Because you see, in chapter 17, when they tap into the rock and the spring comes up and it provides them with the water that they need, that is a last mention of how God provided them water for the rest of their trip. It's not mentioned anywhere else. So Jewish tradition just assumes, well, the rock must have traveled with them somehow. They carried it. They put it on a wagon. Who knows? So the rock must have been with the Israelites the whole time they were in the desert. Paul also uses this story to draw a connection to Jesus as the source of our spiritual nourishment. Okay? So what he's making a comparison here is he's taking the ordinary rock that was used to bring salvation to the people of Israel to this ordinary figure named Jesus, okay, to bring salvation to the rest of the world. Now, we know Jesus is anything but ordinary. He was the Son of God, right? But imagine what the people thought of Jesus at the time, because he didn't really fit the mold of what they were looking for when they were anticipating this coming Messiah. The scribes and the elders and the religious experts were working around the clock trying to figure out, trying to pinpoint, when is he coming? What's he going to look like? And then he arrives. Just an ordinary son of a Jewish carpenter. And he just didn't fit the profile. No degree. No formal education. Just like a rock in the wilderness. You see the connection? And you know what? They missed it. They missed it. But in Jesus, just like the rock in the wilderness, God provides for the people. God provides for us. But we can be like the Israelites sometimes, right? Just like the chief priests, just like the elders, just like the scribes who missed the Messiah. Sometimes we want the spectacular, not the ordinary. And we want it to appear with a flash and a bang, with all the shock and awe, because that's how we know God's there. We want to be wowed by the presence of God without doing any seeking ourselves. Remember, Jesus told us, "I am the bread of life. Whoever comes to me will never go hungry. and whoever believes in me will never be thirsty. This is God's provision at work. See, our world is surging with the presence of God. Just below the surface, just like the water that surges, that was surging under the thin crust of the rock in the wilderness, Jesus and God, they follow us disguised as the ordinary. There's beauty all around us. The divine is everywhere. Think about the beauty of our bodies. Think about the miracle of the sun and the moon and the rain, the things that we have to have to survive on this planet. Or the mystery of a new life being formed and created in a mother's womb. These are ordinary, everyday things, but that doesn't make them any less divine. Right? So the question is, where have we missed God in the midst of the ordinary? You guys ever seen Patch Adams? Good movie, right? I want to show you a scene from this movie. And I want to kind of just give you an introduction to the scene before we get into it. He just found out that his girlfriend was murdered. She was caring for a psychiatric patient, and he took her life, and then he took his own life. And this was a person he was close to. He was in love with her. They had plans. They were going to start their own medical facility. He had taken her to this spot where he had it all planned out. To preface this scene, I needed to return to another scene in the movie that we're not going to be able to see, but I want to share a quote. This was her talking to Patch. Robin Williams plays the character in the movie. And she says that when I was a girl, I would look out my bedroom window at the caterpillars, and I envied them so much. No matter what they were before, no matter what happened to them, they could just hide away and turn into these beautiful creatures that could fly away completely untouched. Flex for us just this, how God provides for us exactly what we need at just the right moment. Now, I know this movie was based on a true story. That scene may or may not have happened. I don't know. It doesn't matter to me that it did or not, because it is exactly, in my experience, how God responds to us, how God reacts to us, how God provides for us in our dark places, in those desert places. He gives us just what we need at the moment we need Him. See, there are rocks all around us, filled with wells of water, like silence, like prayer, like scripture, one another, a walk in the park, our jobs, the wonder of simply existing, being alive, loving, and being loved, or something as simple as that breath of air that you just filled your lungs with that you never even thought about until I mentioned. God provided that. Or all of you got here safely this morning. Do we stop and wonder, how do we know that God didn't intervene to get us here safely? We could go on and on. See, I think that our own privileged lives stand in the way as a roadblock to prevent us from recognizing how God provides for us in the ordinary, in the small things. If we are willing to break open the rocks and allow them to fill us, we would be willing to tap into these moments. We might just be able to find the answer to this question: is the Lord with us or not? And I think if we're willing to look and to seek God in the desert places in our life, then the answer is going to be a resounding, yeah, you better believe He is. Let's pray. God, we give You praise that You are the one who provides. We give You praise that You are the one that guides us through the desert places, that we never walk into these dark times alone. And we confess to You that there are times that we do feel empty and distant and alone. So we just pray that You will help us to increase our awareness. Help us to look for You in the ordinary. Help us to look for You through the cracks and the things that we miss. We couldn't begin to thank You for all the different ways that You provide for us, because so many of them go beyond our knowledge. But if we are to stop and to seek, I believe many more of them would come to view. So help us to find you in the holy ordinary. Thank you for having our back. Thank you for your guidance, and thank you for your provision. We ask all these things in the name of the one who taught us how to pray, saying, Our Father, which art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever.
I hope that you have a blessed week. I don't know about you, but my eyes have been opened in wonder this morning to all the ordinary things around me that if I just take an extra moment to stop are constant reminders of God's presence and provision with me and for me. Man, my eyes are open in wonder this morning. So may we be filled with that love. May we be set to go and just share that love with everybody we come into contact with this week. So go in peace and be the revolution. Amen.